from the vault. High atop the pastoral center of the Diocese of Camden, you're listening to Talking Catholic.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to Talking Catholic. I am Pete Sanchez, staff writer, social media coordinator for the Catholic community of South Jersey. And you're listening to the only podcast, the only Catholic podcast in South Jersey. We're excited that you're joining us again today on this Friday. And as always, I'm here with my co-host, Mike Walsh, Director of Communications for the Diocese of Camden.
Hey,
Mike.
Pete. I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good. Although I think you may have misspoke. There's a ticking time clock on that only Catholic podcast of South Jersey, because you are going to be doing a new podcast very, very soon.
Yes, I'm excited. I don't want to say too much, but if you loyal listeners will recognize the name Lori Power. She's been on a few times. Mm-hmm. And her and I and some other people I'm getting a group together to talk about saints.
Right. It won't be anything like Talking Catholic. It'll be a completely different, even though you'll be the co-host, it'll be a completely different focus.
Yes.
So now that we've put this out there, I did that on purpose so that make sure that we actually got this thing out. So people will now hold your feet to the fire.
Well, it's great, Mike, because I don't want to say, I'm reticent to say who else I've talked to about this, but just today I talked to somebody who was very enthusiastic about also joining the Saints conversation. So
that's great.
It'll be at least there'll be a few with Lori and I, and then whoever else, like I said, it'll be a team of people. Maybe you, Mike, will come aboard.
Nope.
If you thought no?
No.
You don't want to talk about
no,
Saints?
No, it'll be a completely different animal. So
okay, yeah, it'll be a different flavor. Yep. I don't even know what we're gonna call it yet.
I don't think my sarcasm has any place in that podcast. So let's have it be a completely different group. And I am truly looking forward to it. It'll be part of our new podcast empire.
You got it.
Speaking of things that I'm quite energetic about.
Yeah, Mike, what's going on?
So earlier today, I had the opportunity to spend about an hour and a half with 12 dreamers from the South Jersey area. Bishop Sullivan called a meeting of dreamers from the area to come and sit with them and have a conversation about what it's like to live in this country as a dreamer, how they feel about the current state of immigration, and how they're affected by the knowledge that they could very well be deported at some time in the very near future. So as part of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, on Monday, February 26th, there is going to be a Lenten Action for Dreamers, a congressional call-in campaign. So as sort of a precursor to this campaign, he wanted to bring some dreamers in. We opened it up to some of our media friends. We had folks from the Courier Post and the Philadelphia Inquirer, SNJ Today, Telemundo, and NBC 10 came and sat with us as these 12 people told their unbelievable stories. You're going to be able to see at least the in-house story up by Friday afternoon. Mary McCusker just finished it. It is beautiful and heart-wrenching.
Awesome.
You'll also see some of my photographs of these just wonderful people sitting around telling their stories. Bishop Sullivan was incredibly, as he always is, very engaged, obviously. But this is something that really moved him. We had off on Monday because of the holiday, and on Tuesday morning, I thought it was going to be sort of an easy week this week, and think, there's nothing really on the schedule, but he had gotten word about the call in, and at that point it was all hands on deck, and we were putting this together, and this is something that he and the bishops feel very strongly about, that we as Americans really need to be focused on figuring out a way of keeping these dreamers, who are quite frankly Americans in almost every sense of the word, except for their immigration status. They've lived here since they were babies. They are, if you listen to these stories today, these are people, English is not their second language, it's their first language. They've never known their previous countries, not in any reasonable way. So it's something that they're very, really feel very strongly about. So they're asking that on Monday, February 26th, you call your senator, you call your representative. There's a flyer for this campaign up on the website, the Catholic Diocesan website. or the diocesan website for Camden. And basically, you'll be on that flyer is the phone number to call and the process to call and what to tell your suggestions anyway for what to talk to your representative about when you leave a message. And just let them know that if this is something that's important to you, if you feel that it's as Catholics, we should be out there protecting these young people who are giving so much to our countries. These are people who have jobs. These are people who have gone to school. These are people who have careers ahead of them. All young adults that we met with today, just beautiful, beautiful young people. So anyway, if you feel an urge to do that, go to CamdenDiocese.org/dreamers, where you'll find a statement from Bishop, the story from today, as well as the flyer for how to call. And, you know, I hope you'll take part. And Pete, you haven't got a chance to read the article yet, but I did. And Mary McCusker did her usual, you know, hit it out of the ballpark. Oh, self, really captured what this meeting was like today.
Yeah, and just I think I've talked about a little bit of my background on this program. Just with my parents, my grandparents immigrated from Cuba. They came here and they wanted a new life for their family based on their faith, and very faith-filled Catholics. And I'm ever grateful for that opportunity that I got from them and from my dad, the hard work that they put in. And I want the same for the dreamers. I want them to find, you know, they come here looking for the dream. This is our call. You know, we need to be with them. So I'm glad. I'm very much looking forward to reading that article, Mike. Yeah. So call in people.
Yep.
And
so what else we got going on in the diocese this weekend?
Well,
for this upcoming week,
Mike, have you ever been to like a masquerade night?
Not since I was a child.
Well, there's a Monte Carlo masquerade going on March 3rd. This is next weekend, 2018, 7 to 11 at St. Maria Goretti Hall in Runnymede. It's a fun night of fundraising. Event attire: black and white, with a splash of red and a masquerade mask. And you can play casino games, Mike, blackjack, roulette, craps, Texas Hold'em. I've never heard of some of these. Caribbean stud.
It's all news to me.
That's the money wheel. So there will be basket auction and special events. And for tickets, call Kirk Popiolek. And this does not have a phone number for Kirk, unfortunately.
Well, but you can always call the parish, too.
You can, yeah. And again, as with all these events, these are on CamdenDiocese.org. Mm-hmm. Right on the right-hand side, you see a calendar. This is for March 3rd, the Monte Carlo Masquerade in Runnymede, St. Maria Goretti Hall. That's Holy Child Parish. Well, St. Teresa Regional School is running it, part of the parish. And Mike, another question. Have you ever been fishing?
Many times.
Many times. Mm. What have you caught?
Many things.
Many things, yeah. I've caught fluke. I think that's about it.
Yeah, and I've done river fishing, deep sea fishing. I've done all sorts. Yeah. I truly enjoy it. I've spent a lot of time with my grandfather's fishing, and then very remembered very fondly. What are we fishing for on this ad?
Well, listeners, our last podcast, I think it was the last one, Father Nick Dudo, he'll be at the next Theology on Tap in Cherry Hill. Fish for Lent, being missionary disciples. That'll be March 13th, Tuesday, at, once again, Tiernan Oak Kitchen and Irish Pub in Cherry Hill. Doors open 7, presentation 7:30 to 9, with Father Nick Dudo, the vicar for clergy for the diocese, who, as it is also, was a chef in Atlantic City. If you listen to the podcast, you'd find that, you know, you'd figure that out. I'll be there. And I don't know, Mike, are we going to record? Is this going to be another one to record?
I think so. I mean, we'll talk to Greg and we'll talk to Father Nick. But yeah. I think it would be good.
And again, this is Theology on Tap, a discussion series for Catholic young adults and their friends, married, single, 18, 19, 20s, and 30s. It's just going to be a wonderful time. Come out. There will be no cost to attend. March 13th, Tuesday. Doors open at 7. So come out and learn how to be fishers of men. And I,
well, there is one cost to attend. If not, there's no cost to attend, but there is a cost if you care to imbibe, as I recall.
Yeah, right? If you want, and come out and you can. Yeah. But if you want a Guinness, you know the Irish pub, it'll cost you something.
And if they want to buy me a Guinness, so that, but which is fine. Or maybe I'll buy Guinnesses. We'll see. See what
well, I would love a Guinness. So okay. Come out and buy Mike and I Guinnesses. Thank us for our hard work here. And so then on March 18th, Mike, we have really fun, the fifth annual the Diocese of Faithful Food Drive, mm-hmm. which is going to be all over. Food donations can be dropped off at any Catholic church in the diocese on Sunday, March 18th. They're looking for proteins such as beans, chili, peanut butter, tuna fish, all canned chicken soup, and virgin vegetables, canned virgin vegetables, spaghetti sauce, applesauce, fruit juice, vegetable juice. So come out. The goal here is 150,000 pounds of food.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wonderful, and it's just a great, you know, help the hungry.
It is. It's a great event, and it's one we've been doing now for several years. And I got to say, I'm always impressed by the parishioners that come out for a one-day event. It is amazing just how many parishes. I've seen truckloads of food being brought in and then distributed. And the need, you know, I'm not sure it's something we think about on a regular basis, but the need is more widespread in our diocese than I think we realize. I think we've mentioned with Greg Coogan once or twice that even the Catholic Campus Ministry, they keep a food pantry just for the college kids who go to Rowan University. Because there are, believe it or not, you know, people who do not have enough, you know, college students who do not have enough food to make it through the week. So you would be surprised at how rampant food insecurity is. But I certainly hope that people will come out on the 18th.
And I think people get the idea that they only need food during the holidays, and this
right.
is kind of, you know, I guess maybe they think it's the off season now. I hate to put it like that, but you know the need is great,
mm-hmm.
and we're in March or we're in February, but this is taking place March 18th. So I just if you have anything in your pantry. Stuff, you know, put it in a bag, like a grocery bag, and bring it over, save it, you know, do it today. Grab a grocery bag, put some stuff in there, put it in the corner of your kitchen, and then remember, maybe put March 18th on it.
That's a good idea.
It's not a bad, yeah, and bring it to your church then and collect it. So it'll just be fun.
Yeah.
So Mike, who do we have on the show today?
We have Father John Fisher, the rector of the Cathedral of the Immaculate Conception in Camden. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
He's also an oblate of St. Francis de Sales, and one of, as Pete mentioned before we went live, one of our favorite saints is the patron saint of communicators like us, though far more eloquent. And even with 53 episodes under our belt, I don't think we've reached his level of communication yet. He's reached a lot more people than we have. So
he had to reach a diocese in which he wasn't even allowed to go into.
That's true.
Yeah, so that's how he started a lot of the pamphlets and flyers that he would send out. That's
mm-hmm.
became a great spiritual director and wrote over 10,000 letters of spiritual direction. Unfortunately, we don't have all of them, but we've got a good number of them.
Yeah.
Wow.
And what's, you know, he's had an interesting, he has many perspectives on a number of topics, and there are two topics you kind of brought to our attention before we came on today, and one of them actually kind of really resonated with me, as Pete's taking it away from the front of my face so I can't quite read it. The direction of intention was one of them. It tends to be something that I have a hard time focusing on myself from time to time. Can you give us an idea of sort of...
Sure. The direction of intention is for the Office of St. Francis de Sales, more or less our Philly special. It's our... It's our bread and butter play. It is just a powerful means to take the ordinary and make it extraordinary. So it's a very simple prayer that we're to pray before all of our actions, whether they be exterior or interior, And there's some different versions of it. But the one thing that we are to do as oblates, no matter where our ministry is, whether it's in secondary education or the parish or in prison, is we have been asked by our founder, Father Brisson, to teach this because it's the most powerful means, he thought, for not only us, but for all people to be holy. So it's a simple prayer that goes like this. My God, I give you this action. Please give me the grace to conduct myself during it in a manner most pleasing to you. So as a high school student at an oblate school, I was one of 2,800 kids who were praying this, not only at the beginning of the day, but in front of every single class. So it just became like breathing, as Father Brisson always told us, second nature. And so we knew this prayer inside and out, which is an interesting point because many years later, after I entered the Oblates and I'm teaching at our school in Wilmington, they had a different version of the direction of intention. And so I'm in the front of the classroom. I actually had a look at the placard version of it. And the students looked at me like, you don't know this yet? And I'm thinking, well, yours has more words. I guess if you pay more tuition, you get more words. But their version went, my God, give me the grace to perform this action with you and through love of you. In advance, I offer to you all the good that I may do and accept all the difficulty I may meet therein. But what I turned back on the students was the fact that I had a look at your version meant that I knew the version that I was taught so well, and it was like breathing. But for us, it just simply is the act that we pray, whether we do an interior action like going to prayer, or we're going to read, or it's an exterior action like we're going to cut the lawn, or we're going into Mass, etc. And it's something that just allows us to take the action and just make it what is maybe secular and to make it holy. And Father Brisson just encouraged us to please never, ever neglect this. And in this prayer, my God, I give you this action. Please give me the grace to conduct myself during it in a manner most pleasing to you. There's really three movements or three acts. And the first one is asking, as we do in a lot of prayer. So give me the grace. And then there's another gerund, offering in advance. Okay, I offer this act to you. And then that third gerund, accepting. So asking, offering, and accepting. And I accept all the difficulty I may meet therein. And whatever comes my way, it's your will and it's not my will. And it's thy will be done. And when we do this continuously before each of our different actions that we have in the day, then we can find ourselves praying constantly as almost that we're spending the entire day in prayer. And what it really does is, most importantly, it unites our will to God's will, and that's what we're to be doing. Not my will be done, but thy will be done. My God, I give you this action. Please give me the grace to conduct myself doing it in a manner most pleasing to you. Now, we used to tell the students, hey, this isn't magic. Like, I didn't study for the chemistry exam, so I'm going to the chemistry class, pray the direction of intention, and all of a sudden I'm going to get an A. I said, but on the other hand, it says that I may accept all the difficulty and may meet therein, so then you can say, okay, I messed up. And now I need to make sure I get back on the road and do my studies and hard work. But we do it in front of each new activity. And the beauty of it is, especially when I was in the, you know, the classroom, if you had a bad second period because you didn't get the answer right or you didn't do your homework or, you know, the teacher was less than kind to you, then when you go to third period, there's a new direction of intention and there's a new beginning. It was always that beginning of a new action, whatever it was. Going to lunch, going out to play. So as principal of our school, in my later part of my career, I said to everyone, whether you're in the student council meeting, whether you're the director of the play, whether you're the soccer coach, one of the things I'm going to ask you when you come in for a review is this being done every, and it was. And when our schools get together during the summer from different areas and they go to our camp for a Salesian workshop and they pray the direction of intention, they may notice the different nuances, but they know they have something that bonds them. Just one little anecdote that I love to tell. When I was at our school in Wilmington, you know, there's maybe 1,100 boys, and we're going to the pep rally, and because we're playing the arch enemy. And before that pep rally, where we're going to kill St. Mark's or whatever it is, you've got 1,100 deep masculine voices praying the direction of intention. And then the second moment, it's like, all right, now let's kill St. Mark's. But it's that thing that unites it. And come May, my next wedding is a a graduate of one of our schools, and his two brothers preceded him in marriage and in graduation. And in the wedding, there's going to be a couple students from the school. In fact, his father, future father-in-law is also a graduate of the school. So what we'll do before the wedding, we just get all the kids from that school, and we pray the direction of intention. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, oh, man, this is pretty awesome. Yeah. So that's it in a nutshell. I've got much more to say, but if you have any questions. But the whole thing, it allows us to just keep our mind doing God's will, not our will, that in the difficulty, then we can accept that this is maybe the cross that God pointed out to us. And the success, it's not our success. We offer it up. But what it does, I mean, it can take an algebra class and make it a sacramental, mm-hmm. which is really cool. It can take soccer practice. It can take something, you know, mundane as doing the laundry. And then this is the activity that you're offering up to God. But to do it kind of perpetually, kind of habitually, and it just, like I said, it becomes sort of like second nature, you're breathing.
And that's the beauty of a Catholic education, to find, like, I apologize, I'm Jesuit educated. So
well, we welcome sinners.
Well then, on that note, I went to St. Joe's Prep in North Philadelphia, and I went to
great school.
Yeah, thank you. No, I knew you were principal, or you taught at Father Judge.
I said Father Judge. Went to Father Judge. Taught at Father Judge.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. That was we always prayed to beat them in football. No. With much love, I'm just. But I remember at the prep, one of the things we learned, the Ignatian ideal, was finding God in all things. And you were saying that, you know, when you do laundry, you can make everything a sacramental.
And Francis de Sales was deeply a student of the Jesuits. So mm-hmm. a lot of his theology and spirituality is Jesuit influenced.
Oh, I didn't know. That's not, it's all connected. It really, and it's, you know, you talk about finding the will of God. I was reflecting on this earlier today. Yesterday, I was with a colleague of mine going out on assignment to an event, and there was one path I thought we should go to our destination. I was like, why don't you make a left here? He said, oh, I'll go right. And I trusted him. I knew, okay, that's where we'll go. And I was just thinking, you know, that's kind of how we're passengers on this journey. I mean, we kind of think, okay, maybe we should go left, but then God's like, no, I want you to go right. And that's like the will of God. Mm-hmm. And it's, and I think, you know, there's so many bumper stickers that say, Jesus is my co-pilot. It's like, no, he's my pilot. I'm not in charge. Like, in some ways I have control, but just give it to God, you know, give. And it's beautiful to think about total surrender, but that's also, for me at times, it's horrifying. Just to, you know, let go and have trust.
But I always encourage saying the direction of intention when you get in the car, because it can make you a more gentle driver with the road rage and craziness that we have on our highways. So,
all right. In that case, I think I'll put it on my steering wheel, because I think I may need this.
No, especially going home today, this Friday, the Friday rush, everybody on the Admiral Wilson. So, but, and just...
you know, I'm curious, how do, having been a teacher of young students, how did they react to this prayer? Like, was it something that they would come to, you know, slowly, or did you find that over time they embraced it?
Well, probably like most Catholic schools, you know, before each class, you know, you stand for the prayer, et cetera. Well, this is posted in every room. It was posted in the elevators. And so the students knew this inside and out. Mm-hmm. So within a couple of seconds, this, I mean, especially the version I learned, the shorter version, it just was easy to memorize. But it was second nature. It just, and they did it, everything. And I kind of also didn't want them to do any other prayer but this one, so that it would stay with them. I'm going to fast forward. Mm-hmm. I did a study while I was in Wilmington on the dissemination of the Salesian spirituality at our school, because we had over 100-year anniversary, and particularly focused on this direction of intention. And here's some of the things I found out. I was talking to different people from the class of 47 to 97. I did it in 10-year increments, et cetera. And here's some of the things that people had said. One was a younger graduate, and he went into one of the four military academies. And he said that during the summer, when the boot camp, they were trying to emasculate him. And he said, I kept saying, bring it on, because you're going to try to humiliate me and beat me down. And all I'm doing is saying, my God, I give you this action. Mm-hmm. And so he said, the direction of intention just said, you know, bring it. Mm-hmm. I can handle this. There's another gentleman who in San Diego, I have to go back to my notes. I don't remember the details. But whatever it was, he was involved in an accident and he was unjustly charged and he had to go to court. And it took 8 years for whatever the thing was to be settled. But through the grace of God, whatever happened in his situation, it now became a law that favored possible victims like him. Mm. So his situation turned into something good for the people. And I said, and he said, the only thing that got me through that was I kept saying a direction of intention. The perhaps most beautiful story I heard about the direction of intention was a young father who's firstborn, maybe. It could have been another birth in the family. But the baby was born with just multiple situations and multiple issues. And you would go to the hospital and see this little baby you could put in the palm of your hand that had all these kinds of things on all her body. And he said it was just so heartbreaking. And he said the only way he could go and see his baby every day was as he was driving onto the campus of the hospital. He's praying in the direction of intention, and that gave him the strength. And there's just so many stories. I wish I could say about that wedding that I was the one who invented this practice, but it was this actual student who's getting married in May, his older brother, who never was afraid to take charge, said to me, hey, let's get everyone together, we're praying in the direction of intention. Yeah. And these were guys that were in their 30s, so they're, what, 12 years removed from graduation, so... But
that's a great testimony to the power of that prayer and the power of that school that 12 years later, it was important enough to them to do that. I can't say I had that experience in any of my own schooling that something like that's been brought forward. I know other people who have, even people who, I went to St. Joe's too, St. Joe's University. Yeah. And I know a lot of people who have gotten married on the campus and that meant a lot to them. I can't say that I've ever sort of experienced that myself, but I think it's wonderful that it happens, and particularly this highly secularized day that we live in, that we're still seeing that. You know, do you find that, that's a good question too. Do you find that that this kind of a prayer is able to pull you out of the secular world a little bit and remind you of, even in the most mundane things that we're doing?
Well, I don't want to call celebrating or presiding mass mundane, and it's certainly not in the secular world, but May is 30 years of ordination for me. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how many masses you say, but when you do something so many times, you know, it can sort of get into some kind of routine. But when you go out, and before you go out to say Mass, when you pray a direction of intention, you are saying, okay, here's where my intention is going. It's all about you, Lord.
Yeah.
And that's a wonderful thing, because then it can really make this Mass, the 10,000th one you've ever said, still as special. You know, in a lot of sacristies throughout the world, there's this placard that they have somewhere, and it says, Priest of God, pray this Mass as if it's your first Mass, your last Mass, and your only Mass. Mm-hmm. Well, the direction of attention for me as an oblate, and for, I guess, all the oblates, it allows us to kind of do that.
Yeah.
Let me say this. When things sometimes, not always, but most times when things don't go well, I always say, did I say my direction of attention? And more often than not, it's like, no, you didn't.
Really?
You were too busy.
Yeah.
And you messed up.
Yeah.
But I mean, you got the difficult, you know, client that's going to come into your office. You have yourself a medical appointment and you can't stand a needle. Any other kind of situation, you know, you're going over to an in-law's house and there's going to be this one person who's going to constantly, whatever, in some way annoy you. The direction of intention, again, not magic, not perfect, but it helps us to put ourselves in the right frame. We're asking for God's grace. Mm-hmm. We're going to offer this action up and then we're going to accept whatever comes from the loving. Mm-hmm. The loving hand of our God.
Yeah.
And I love the, you're talking about your first Mass, last Mass, holy Mass. You could apply that, you know, for us lay people. Maybe it could be first day, last day, only day. Like, you have one day to really glorify God.
Absolutely.
And how are you going
to
live it?
That's absolutely true. So I used to say to the teachers, I says, look, I mean, you got a 27-year career. I want you to go into your next period and teach it as if it's your last, your first, and your only. Teach it with such incredible enthusiasm.
Yeah.
We call in this in Salesian speak, passionately well. You know, not that it's competition, but that you're teaching this class better than you have ever done. You know, and then that way you're taking that student too. We have another saying, you know, respect the soul of your pupil. You know, that we're just embracing each student as uniquely different, as the imprint of God, as the soul of God, as the person of God in your life. But yeah, I mean, Pete, that is right on. Everything we do with the direction of attention, with that intentionality, it can be as if we've never done it before, and we put it with so much, you know, gusto. The athlete that goes on to practice, you know, any filly that goes across that line to play in that play a field, you know, to just offer this up tremendously. So, you know,
I have to be honest with you. I'm quite moved by this conversation we're having right now, because I'm thinking in my own daily life how many times this would have been beneficial to me. So apparently, Pete, there was a problem with us going to St. Joe's as opposed to Father Judge. All right, of course, I'm a Jersey guy, so I had no oblates in my life until I came to work for the diocese. Although that brings up a follow up question. For those of our listeners who don't know, what are the oblates? What is the oblates?
Yeah, so we're a group that was founded by Father Brisson and the good mother, Mother Mary de Sales Chapuis. He was the chaplain to the Visitation Sisters. And the story goes that there was, Father Brisson had, or St. Francis de Sales had found the Visitation of Holy Mary. And then one of the superiors, Mother Mary de Sales Chapuis, wanted Father Brisson, who was a diocesan priest, to found a religious order for men who would follow the spirituality of St. Francis de Sales. Well, he wanted nothing to do with this. Mm-hmm. And she kept, you know, putting the full court press on him, and he would not hear of it. And I think the story says that after 30 years of this, I may have that number wrong, he's in the parlor of the Visitation and sees a vision of Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And basically, he gets the impression, okay, I need to listen, and I need to found this. And Father Brisson becomes one of the first four oblates. By being a priest, he also became the novice master of his own class. But it, you know, he founded this group, and I guess at one point, you know, we were a couple thousand strong, nowhere near the Dominicans or the Jesuits or the Salesians. But you know, we're all still throughout the world. We're in Africa, we're in Latin America, France, all those areas, and in this diocese, we're here at the cathedral where Christ the King and Our Lady Star of the Sea. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, three parishes in the diocese. And you've been at the cathedral for how long now?
My second year.
Second year. Yeah. How are the rector responsibilities meeting up with your past life and current life?
Well, I love the classroom. They're just an awesome thing to be able to be in the company of high school students and university students, and you know, just seeing them grow and their growing edges, and just try to be a symbol of hope and love for them. But I had this last couple of years, never lost a passion. We'd go in the classroom tomorrow and try to teach as passionately well as I ever did before. But I just had this thing, you know, I want to take my priesthood and use it in a different type of way. Again, with this direction of attention and with my own professional demand, I tried to teach every class better than the previous. But it's safe when you're teaching, you know, education or Spanish or theology. Not that they're not trying issues, but you know what you're going to do. You can kind of control the agenda. When you're in parish life, I just assume that nothing is safe. And you have no idea what's going to come down the road. But also, how do I use my priesthood in a different way? Now, we were saying Mass every Sunday at different parishes. I had, before coming here, probably over 250 weddings from previous students. So I certainly had my fill of ministry, but the parish life was something totally new, and I wanted to welcome the challenge of not being in control.
Yeah.
And trust me, being in Camden in the cathedral, if I have learned anything, it's that I am not in control. You know, God has to be my pilot, not the co. And you never know. But that's the beauty of it. And especially in the city of Camden, which just presents a lot of opportunities to see so many different and varied faces of God. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's, you know, whether it's the great employees who always lift my spirit at the 1205, or whether it's someone right outside our street who, you know, just OD'd and now we're going to try to get them back into good shape, et cetera.
So. That's the thing. Our offices are right next door to the cathedral. We share the parking lot. So Mike and I see a lot of the same faces that you see. And sometimes we've interacted with spaces too, you guys. And it's something. And what you said, it's such a testament to you that you were talking about 250 wedding that you were. And that's amazing that those relationships that you've been able to form.
Yeah, that's the blessing of teaching.
Well, I don't know if there's many. I don't know about you, Mike. Were there many priests that taught you that you'd want them to officiate your wedding? Did you have one of them?
He was offered. It was the principal of my school, Father Kenneth Johnston. He wasn't able to make it. So it was a friend of ours, Father Joe Byerly, who officiated our wedding, and Father Peter Eidler was there as well, and Monsignor Gallagher out of Woodbury was also now retired, but he was there too. So yeah, we had plenty of priestly formation there in front of the article. Actually, I routinely blame Father. This is a side tangent, but I routinely blame Father Joe Byerly for the fact that we've been able to stay together for almost 20 years now, because during those hard times, you know, I remember back to our pre-Cana meetings where he said, Mike, he turns to us and goes, he says to both of us at the same time, what is the purpose of your role as spouses? And, you know, we both look at him dumbfounded because we're young and stupid. You know, my formation was terrible at the time. It was only beginning. And I blurt out to get the other person into heaven. And he goes, yes, that's exactly what it is. He says, your job is to get her into heaven and her job is to get you into heaven. And then ever since then, I go, oh, great. So her immortal soul is in my hands. I have to be with her at all times. So during those dark periods, I'm not even kidding around. But that every married couple goes through, that has actually stuck with me. Okay.
Now, is Joe at St. Peter's?
No, Tim. Father Tim. That's Tim. Yeah.
Joe's at St. Rose of Lima.
Yes.
Father Joe. Sorry, I did not mean to just call you Joe. I mean, you might be able to call him.
No. He and I have never called a priest anything but Father whatever. Yeah.
Well, so, Father well, Tim Byerly is a big scholar of Francis de Sales.
Yes. Yes, that's true.
Really? I did not know that. Mm-hmm.
That's your pastor, right, Pete?
He is. Yeah. But I need to ask him about that. Mm-hmm. And and I just got to say, Mike, I think just being married to you, your wife, is further.
Oh yeah, she's far further along than me. I am her. I am her purgatory. But you know, there was a question lingering in the back of my head. I was going to ask you, Father, and it popped out of my head again. I was going to go back and talk to you about the oblates a little bit. But I completely lost track. The Joe Byerly or Father Joe Byerly conversation has completely thrown me in a different direction. I'll have to circle back to it again. Oh no! Now I remember what I was going to say. I'm sorry. I remember again. You were sort of thrown into the fire when you came to Camden, because in the midst of everything, oh here, be the rector of the cathedral, and oh by the way, we're going to merge all the parishes of Camden. So your parish and St. Joe's Polish. Ended up merging, and that was about an 18-month long process that sort of determined how everything came together. Do you think that that process gave you a rather unique view of Camden as a whole?
Well, again, I stepped into the process probably 6 months into it. Mm-hmm. So at the beginning, I was just observant and listening. We had two really great gentlemen who from our parish just kept me along and brought me up to speed on everything and just watch it. But when you also come from the outside, you don't know the past. So sometimes you can make a comment and say, well, why wouldn't we do it this way? And so there may be some advantage of being the outsider to say you look at things a little bit differently. But I think, you know, the grace of the Holy Spirit was in all of that process. It's something that needed to be done so that we could offer a better prayer life, a better spiritual life, a better parish life to those six parishes that became three. Mm-hmm. So hopefully, and it's going to take time, but there's another contribution. You know, with the Oblates, what we're trying to do is preach the same gospel everyone does, but to put that Salesian spirituality flavor on it. When you look at the parish now, the combined parish that became the Immaculate Conception, So we have Dominicans, we have Mexicans, we have Cubans, we have Puerto Ricans, we have Polish, we have Anglos, we have Filipinos. So it's really become a very diverse parish. So now how do we take the Polish culture and allow that to enhance the gospel message and our sanctity and getting us into heaven as well? So,
and how did last year, the Quinto Encuentro process happened, and you speak Spanish fluently, correct?
With a lot of fluent speakers' patience, yes.
Okay. Well, one of the beautiful events I went to in Biden last year, and I believe I talked to, I forget, some people from your parish about the Quinto Encuentro, about Hispanic. Can you just speak a bit about that, with what's the next steps with that? I'm just curious after.
Well, it started with the parish Encuentro, and that was like a five-week process through last Lent. We started a year ago. And then after that, that was you had a parish Encuentro right after that in May, which was sort of a summation of those 5 weeks. And then you went to a diocesan Encuentro, which you were speaking about in Vineland, where all of the 23 or 25 parishes that have a good Spanish speaking presence all came together for that day of prayer and reflection. And then April, I'm going to say 24th or 28th, whatever the Saturday is, there's the regional Encuentro, and I think that's up in Trenton. And I've been privileged to be asked to go up on that. And then after that, there is the national Encuentro in September for 3 days. And I'm pretty sure I'm accompanying the delegation from the diocese. But again, you know, there's a whole different culture who embraces this gospel and who so loves it and brings the gospel to a different place. Just one of the advantages I've seen in the 2 years I've been here now is you're reading the gospel in Spanish that you have read now for, 58 years. And you're seeing it put in Spanish, and you're getting different nuances that you never saw in the English translation. So that's just a great blessing. I'm continually just enamored of the faith of the Spanish-speaking congregations that we have here. And what impresses me even more is the number of priests who are involved in Spanish apostolate in the Diocese of Camden. That is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
So, one of the things I love, you talked about the 1205. 1205 is a mass every day, and I go when I can, especially during this Lent. I'm trying to go a little more. But I love it's bilingual, and the parts in Spanish, I think, the first readings in Spanish, gospel is in English?
Well, it depends. If I'm from the presider, the gospel is always in Spanish, and then the first reading would be in English.
And with Father Mike, it's,
right. Or if the deacon is there, one of our English-speaking deacons will have the gospel read in English. Yeah.
And I love it because it's such a mix of employees, fellow employees, and the community that you talked about, that the Spanish community. And I love that they sing during the, I don't know any of those offertory songs, and I'm learning them, and it's beautiful to, it's nice to have that faith.
It is nice because there's often a resistance to bilingual masses, I think, with a lot of Anglo parishes. But there's something beautiful about being here and being able to see it. It's helped that it's a 10-minute walk from my office. But you go to that and it offers that inclusivity that I think sometimes we can be tribally resistant to.
We do the first part of the Eucharistic prayer, the institutional narrative part, in Spanish, because the Anglos obviously know what is being said. Mm-hmm. If you're taking and eating, taking and drinking. And then the second part in English. But, every one of those Anglos can say, Señor ten piedad, Cristo ten piedad. And that's the beauty. And they know of saying Dios todo poderoso, that the Lord's forgiven their venial sins at that time. So, I think it's a great blessing. Except it's still a little scary preaching in front of Andres Arango, whose Spanish is impeccable. So,
Will he come after you?
No, never. He's too kind and too gracious.
That is, yes, our good friend of the podcast and the director of Hispanic Ministry, Andres. He saves my bacon many times when I need a translation at the last second, like I did yesterday, as a matter of fact. Literally, he sent me something while he was driving. I think he did it via voice recognition software.
Wow.
Sent me something very quickly, so very useful.
Mike knows this. I'm trying to learn Spanish. I'm working on it.
I think you need to do, Pete, because I was thinking about this too. As I was sitting in the Dreamers meeting today, I was regretting the fact that my St. Joe's Spanish classes did not really sit for the two semesters I went there. But I think I would be better served to learn the language better, particularly considering our diocese is made up of so many Spanish speakers. But it occurred to me that something that Bishop Sullivan has said to me in the past, the thing that was most useful to him was immersion. When he first became a priest, he went to the Dominican Republic for several months, which I'm not saying we can pull off. But he was also immersed into a Spanish speaking parish. And that really is what gave him the opportunity. So maybe instead of Rosetta Stone, I think maybe you and myself and Marianella and Andres and Father Fisher, if they would be so kind to us, need to start using the Spanish language and immerse ourselves.
Yeah. I think that's...
And one of the differences with Bishop Sullivan and myself is I did not have that ability. I only went 4 years ago.
Really?
To Peru for the first time, and just for the summer. Through the Society of St. James, and then 2 summers at our own parish in Manta, Ecuador. It's a decision I totally regret, and I should have done that when I was a new baby priest. Just go. But I think commitment to school and fear of the culture and the food, prevented me. And then all of a sudden, the gospel one day said, don't worry about what you're going to eat or drink. And there was a lot of the letting go, and all of a sudden, I'm in the Villa El Salvador in South Peru in a shanty town, which Pope Paul, St. John Paul II actually visited. And you're immersed in it and you survive. And to this day, the only one that's ever corrected my Spanish has been a little kid. No adult would ever correct you, I make tons of mistakes and you just keep on going. You get a little bit better each day.
So.
I just want to clarify. So you had the fear of the Spanish food?
Yeah, I'm a very poor eater. Yeah, I can live on hamburgers, hot dogs, and a little filet mignon and Caesar salad. But fish and tuna are not staples for me. And even the wonderful parishioners that I have the ability to be with each day, they know I'm not into the Spanish food as well. So.
That's my heritage. That's fine. It's funny. My dad grew up in Cuba, and my aunts and uncles, but they're not fish eaters, which I love fish. It just surprised me. It's like, grew up on an island, but, different strokes. So,
Father, you're from this area?
From Northeast Philly.
Northeast Philly. All right. Born and raised. So fully sports fan of the area too?
Oh, big time.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm no longer a long suffering Eagles fan. I am a proud Super Bowl champion fan.
That's right. Current defending Super Bowl champions. And Pete, as we're starting to tie up here, pitchers and catchers have now already happened. So are you...
First game tonight.
Yes, that's right. First game today. Yes.
So they beat University of Tampa yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
This doesn't mean anything now. It does and it doesn't.
Well, I'll tell you, if my philosophy has always been a terrible preseason predicts a very good regular season. And the Eagles lost every single preseason game, which filled me with great joy. And then the two games they didn't need to win at the end, one they barely won, and then one they lost convincingly. And I was like, this is good. These are all good signs. So I'm really hoping for a poor showing at spring training this year for the Phillies.
Well, we've been throwing that word missionary disciples around, especially with the fifth Encuentro and Pope Francis. But, in their own quiet way, the Eagles were pretty powerful missionary disciples in some of the many things we did. So, or they did. So that's why I thought they're going to win this. They're going to win this. You talk about Chris Long, you know, just giving up his whole salary, and Nick Foles, and then Carson Wentz saying, I love Jesus. I mean, who does that?
No,
and it's not showy. It was just genuine.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, the reaction the night of the Super Bowl, every single person, including – you never see a coach thanking God. I've seen players thank God all the time, but never saw a coach say after a Super Bowl. It literally shocked me.
And I'm told I've never seen Jeffrey Lurie's office, but I'm told outside of his office he has four pictures, and I think one is Martin Luther King. I think one is Gandhi. One is Mother Teresa. I forget who the fourth one is, but – just these inspirational people, you know.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
I was kind of happy he won too.
Yeah, I was too. But mostly for all of us who are long-suffering Eagles fans having to deal with local Cowboys, Giants, and Redskins fans. I think I may have mentioned this on the podcast. Or maybe I didn't. But I talked to some of my Cowboys fan shortly thereafter. And I asked, so what was this like? And he's a Phillies fan, but he's never liked the Eagles. And always said, he said to me, Mike, when they won, it immediately took me back to Joe Carter. I said, really? 93? That's what it felt like for a Cowboys fan to see the Eagles win? It's like, yep, that's what it felt like. And that is still the lowest point of my athletic watching career, was watching Joe Carter tee off on Mitch Williams.
It was a Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
I just think Kurt Schilling, the towel over his head. I'll never forget those images.
You were a young man when that happened.
Well, I was a passionate Phillies fan. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love it. Like, I just talking about baseball, you know, the weather was 70 degrees for 2 days. It was a nice taste. It was a bit rainy. But
you mean earlier this week?
Yeah, earlier this week. And I'm just longing for those days with the radio, you know, on porch, just skimmy and nice. I can listen. I don't even need a TV. Just
well, now you
do radio.
Before you flick the radio on, or before you do anything, now you have a short prayer to say before you do your next thing.
Exactly. And of course, after I listen to this podcast, and after, you know, I recommend listen to this podcast and then putting on the Phillies.
Well, Father, as we tie up for today, and as we move on to the next thing we're going to do today, whatever it might be, would you say the prayer for us one last time?
Sure. My God, I give you this action. Please give me the grace to conduct myself during it in a manner most pleasing to you. Then we usually ended it with God be blessed, which were the words that Francis de Sales always signed at the end of all his correspondences. So,
thank you very much, Father.
Thank you, guys. It was a pleasure.
Thank you,
everybody, thanks for listening. Pete, you and I will see each other in a week.
Sounds good.
All right.
Thanks, everybody.
Later.